Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and this, as always, is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. Today, we are taking a deep dive into all of the different things that are happening in the vaping market. This is a market that has been extremely important for retailers in the last few years, has seen significant growth. But because of that growth and because it's been, to an extent, unchecked, the government is doing a lot to make interventions in that category. So I'm joined today by James and Ed. Hello, both of you.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
And we're going to talk through exactly what's happening. Everything from the disposables ban, which is probably making most of the headlines, through to recycling and other interventions down the line. So let's start, I think, let's do this in chronological order. And let's go with the things that retailers are probably should be worried about most of all first. And that, I think, is recycling. So, Ed, could you outline what's happening on recycling? Because this has been a big area of concern for retailers and for the industry. And what's changing over the next few days?
Sure. So the government made a decision at the very beginning of this year to change how the requirements on retailers and how they recycle vaping products. So before, you could essentially put up a poster in your store and say, here's a place where you can recycle your vaping products, and you can be signed up to this central scheme that would allow you to encourage people to go to another location to recycle your goods. But now, if you sell a vaping product, you have to offer a way for them to recycle that product in the store on a like-for-like basis. So that means for retailers, they're going to have to offer a place for customers to bring back their vapes, a recycling bin. They're going to have a poster up in store that has some mandatory requirements on what's on that poster. But most importantly as well, you've got to have someone to come and collect those vaping products from your store and recycle them properly as well. So it's quite a lot of logistical things to do there. You've got to have a new bin to have in store. You've probably got to have a new relationship with a waste collector to collect that. And you've got to do a bit of record keeping to make sure you know how many vapes you've had back and that they've gone to somewhere to be recycled properly, which is a lot to do because this is going to start to be enforced from April. So the Office for Product Safety and Standards will be out there writing to businesses, looking at businesses to see if they're complying. And of course, it applies to any business that sells a vape.
And is this something that is cost neutral? Is this a cost for retailers? How does this work logistically?
Well, of course, it depends how you want to set it up. There's different ways you want to set it up. But fundamentally, yes, there will be a cost associated with this because you've got to have some new infrastructure in your store. You've got to have some new processes. So there's a cost of having a bin for storing the vaping products. And you've got to think about how you can do that safely. So they've got to be in a cool, dry place, and they've got to be able to hold the volumes that you want to hold. You've also got to have that relationship with a waste collecting service, of which there are many out there, and there's a link to a list in our guide that you can look at. But fundamentally, there's a cost for those businesses to come and collect it and to recycle it properly. And generally, that cost is based on the weight of the material that you take back. So the weight of the vapes you take back, there'll be a cost for them to come and collect it, but also to recycle it as well. So you really got to get on looking at who's the best provider for you in your area and who you can work with. There are some options on the market that are lower cost and some are free, but I would just say you've got to make sure that you've got all those record keeping things in place to make sure all the materials are recycled properly. So it's worth a shop around. It's worth looking at the information in our vape recycling guide too.
And James, this is a significant change for retailers. One of many changes on recycling that we're seeing over recent and future years. What do you think the impact of this is going to be on the sector, and do you think it's effective?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is, I mean, it is absolutely right that there are measures being put in place to recycle vapes. I mean, and you also step back, I mean, it's completely wrong that here is a product that has lithium batteries and other precious materials, and that's just going straight to landfill. And that is usually the case of what's happening. We're getting more fires in waste collection vehicles and things like that. So this is a real issue and needs to be addressed. I think how effective this measure will prove to be, and essentially, I suppose, whether the benefits of this outweigh the costs in practice. And Ed's talked about the cost, then there will be costs to our members and to others. It's going to come down to how well we can communicate with customers to make this the norm. And if it's the norm that people are coming back to the store to recycle vapes and return vapes, then I mean that does two things. One is there's less of those products going to landfill, which does matter, but it's also can help establish the habits of those customers that they come back and when they buy a new one, they're dropping the old one off, or they're storing up a few and taking them back. But what we know that recycling and return point facilities can do, it can drive that footfall back to the store related to people who are purchasing those products. So it can be like kind of a not it's not a USP because everyone's going to do it, but doing it well and promoting it and marketing it well can be something that can set your store apart a little bit and can help generate customer loyalty. Whether overall it will generate enough savings in terms of those materials not going to landfill. And we have to see. I think and I think we have to promote it as hard as we can because that's the right thing to do. And also, as I say, it can ingrain some of those behaviours that can ultimately mean that retailers are getting into that habit for the consumer of where they return their products, where they buy new products. What we wouldn't want, and actually, Esmeco's here, we talk about deposit return schemes as well, which obviously we're not talking about today. But what we wouldn't want is for this the habit of consumers to just be, oh, I store up a load of vapes, and then when I go to the supermarket, I'll drop a load off, and then I'll probably buy my vapes when I'm there. So there is an opportunity in terms of those customer habits. But I mean, Ed's outlined some of the requirements there, and they do come at a cost. And I think in the short term, certainly, retail is going to be seeing this as a net cost of the business for sure.
Yeah, and Ed, one of the things that retailers I think will be asking as well internally is about insurance and whether that's nailed down. What conversations have you had with retailers and insurance companies about whether they need additional cover, whether their existing cover will suffice? What's the current status of that?
I think the unfortunate answer is you have to talk to your individual insurance provider about this, and there are different approaches to different ones. But essentially, there's some good advice around how you can store vaping products safely, as I said, in a cool, dry place. There's a link to some information from the National Fire Chief Council's guidance around how to store all waste electrical equipment and battery products, which has been done widely already. I think it's also about the frequency of your collections. So you don't want to have a big box of vapes lying around for too long. It's sort of recommended best practice that at least quarterly these are being collected. So I think individual conversations with your insurance company and checking your existing policy is a good starting point, but also thinking about how you store them safely and have regular pickups too are the two main bits of advice I would provide.
Absolutely. And we've got more detail on this on our website. We've got a dedicated vape recycling guide, which has all the information on there and links out to what retailers have to do. There's also some information that you have to display in store, which we have a template poster for you to be able to use as well. So the action on vape recycling is this is in place now. It will start to be enforced very, very soon. So the action is to make sure you've got something in place as soon as possible. The next thing on the government's checklist for interventions on vapes is probably the one that's generating the most headlines at the moment, and that is about a ban on disposable vapes. And this is something that we've been talking about to government and to the media quite a lot over the recent months. And most recently, earlier this week, James spoke to BBC Radio 5 Live about the disposable vaping ban and some of the misconceptions about where vapes are accessed from by people that are underage. So let's hear a little bit about that now.
Talk to James Lohman now, Chief Executive of the Association of Convenience Stores. Hiya, James.
Good morning.
A lot of your members will sell disposable vapes. How are they approaching this ban?
Yeah, well, pretty much all of them do, and we're counting down now to a year when this comes in. I think what they're saying is that they actually think there should be some more regulation around the vaping category. But most importantly, they think that it should be enforced, and it's been sort of referenced in the pieces there that we currently have about a third, maybe up to a half of the vape market is illegal. It's illicit vapes, totally unregulated. And I think it's a little bit fantasy policy making to think that we ban disposable vapes and they somehow kind of disappear. They will still be out in the streets. They will still be accessed by children. But just not through legitimate routes. So, I don't think it'll have the consequences the government thinks. And the only way to really address this problem.
Well, hang on. Just before we get into other measures. if you take disposable vapes out of shops, you immediately make it much harder. That will inevitably drive down the numbers. Yeah. Well, you will, because we know teenagers go into convenience stores like your members and get vapes no problem.
And they also buy them off friends on the street.
Yeah, but not exclusively.
They buy them online. Not exclusively, but they will still, if people want to buy disposable vapes, they'll be able to get hold of them after this ban.
Yeah, but I'm not saying they won't disappear. Obviously, they won't disappear. But you will drive down access. You will drive down the numbers of children being able to get hold of them.
Well, at the moment, children are and adults are getting hold of vapes that are illegal, that the constitution of those products is illegal, that they're too much nicotine or not the right, they're not properly tested. And they're getting hold of those every day from sources other than convenience stores and small shops. So I don't accept that by banning them, they disappear. Whether there's a marginal impact in terms of reduction of access, I think is kind of not the point. People who want to get hold of disposable vapes will be able to do so very easily, unfortunately.
How do you deal with it then? If we know that there is an issue with lots of young people vaping, if we know that there is already a huge illegal market, what do you do about it?
It has to come down to enforcement. So the government has set aside £10 million for additional enforcement of the vaping market, and that equates to about £30,000 per local authority. That will not touch the sides. It needs to be a really serious effort around enforcing against access to these products. And also, as I said, the composition of these products, many of the vapes that are being sold are not legal for sale in this country. They don't meet the product standards, have too much nicotine and other things about them, and there's no enforcement. That's all. It has to come down to enforcement at ports, but also in communities. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I suppose the issue.
So as you heard from that interview and other discussions as well, this is a contentious ban. It's coming into place reasonably soon. So Ed, could you outline the details of what exactly is happening, and then we'll get into some of the whys and some of the other details on impact.
Sure thing. So as you said, we had a consultation at the end of last year, which looked at this and the government's smoke-free generation consultation. The outcome of that was that they decided to introduce a disposable vapes ban and some other interventions that will come on to later on. But essentially, the government have got existing powers under the Environmental Protection Act to ban any product that causes environmental harm or harm to human health. And they've used that power to ban things like carrier bags or plastic cutlery or other things. And they're applying the same power to the disposable vapes ban. And essentially, we call this secondary legislation. Is the mechanism that they're using to introduce it. The government like it because they already have the power. They can act faster and quicker to introduce some regulations to ban products. And that's essentially what they've done. They've used that act to introduce some secondary regulations to introduce a disposable vapes ban. And that ban is going to come in from April 2025. There's lots of detail in there. I think some of the contentious stuff is how do you define what a disposable vape is? And the regulations are saying that it has to be a refillable product and a rechargeable product. By refillable, that means you...
So not a refillable or rechargeable product.
Yes. So the products that you can, the vaping products that you can sell will have to be refillable and they'll have to be rechargeable. And by refillable and rechargeable, what we mean is that you have to have a single-use container or they can be topped up with a vaping liquid or a battery that can be recharged. So those are the products that you will be able to sell. Unless they have those specifications, you can't do it. You can't sell them. So disposables would be banned under that format. So that's what's currently being introduced. And as I say, that's coming in April 2025.
Yeah, so hold on a second then. We're talking about some environmental regulations here that are to reduce the impact of disposables, which I completely understand. But moments ago, we were talking about new rules on recycling to do exactly that. So is the government sort of across purposes here a bit?
There's certainly an overlap between these two policies. They introduced the recycling requirements earlier than they made the decision around the disposable ban. But I suppose, yes, we haven't had chance for those vape recycling measures to come in to have an impact, to understand what they've done. Before the government's decided, we're actually going to ban this disposable vape product at the same time. So there is overlap in terms of purpose with what the government are doing. And I think that's a consistent theme with all of this regulation because the government are trying to move fast in this space.
Yeah, yeah. And James, we heard a little bit earlier from your interview about the importance of enforcement. Do you think that the people selling these products illegally will be packing up shutting up shop now, thinking, oh, there's a ban. Well, that's it for us. We'll move on to something else.
That'd be not, I think probably quite the opposite, Chris. I think that they'll be thinking there are some retailers who are currently selling these products, well, a lot of retailers selling a lot of these products, and they'll be banned from doing that. And so, what are those people who currently use disposables going to do? Now, some of them will switch to other products, and it's important to say that. And we're already seeing a little bit of this in the market. We speak to retailers, people moving towards products that would be legal after that deadline. So some of that will happen. Some may switch. They might like the experience of disposable. They don't like the experience of other vapes, and so they might move back to other nicotine products, including combustible cigarettes, which would kind of be the worst thing from a health point of view. What the government, I think, imagines is that people will just quit, But of course, a lot of people will want to carry on using disposables, and therefore they'll source them from elsewhere, as they already do. And I think this is a point which we have to be really persistent and clear and patient in getting across. Is that this is not speculation. The illicit market for vaping is already, I mean, at least a third of the market, and that's a conservative estimate. I mean, many people from the industry I speak to believe it's over half of the industry of vapes are sold in the black market. So, on that basis, unless you're enforcing that black market in a transformationally different and better way, then you're not going to see an impact. And what is going to drive that enforcement? £10 million has been allocated towards that. That's about £30,000 per local authority. And we speak to local authority officers, and that does not touch the sides. That is not going to make any significant difference in how they can enforce the rules here. So there ought to be a massive uplift in enforcement on the back of this. We will be continuing to press for that. And that's going to be, you're going to be very sick of us talking about that over the next year, because that absolutely has to happen. Without that, I think we're just going to see a transfer of those products, a proportion of those disposable vapes that we sell into the black market. And that's kind of the worst of all worlds, particularly as, of course, that black market does not have Challenge 25 policies nor things that we need to stop youth access, and does not have the product testing and systems to govern the makeup of those products, which, if they're illegal, if they're not regulated, can be potentially very dangerous.
Yeah, and there's a running theme here that these are all measures that essentially just target responsible retailers, because if you're outside of the system, then it makes no difference to you either way. And as you say, £30,000 for each local authority is, maintains a potted plant for a year. It doesn't deal with proper enforcement. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said about getting a significant amount of investment into enforcement in the coming years. And if we don't see that, then you'll see a similar situation to where we've got in Australia, where I was talking to some retail businesses out in Australia, and they were saying that the whole market is illicit, and it's pretty blatant and it's pretty out there, and there's just nothing anyone could do about it. So, more to come on that. If retailers want to talk about the impact, if they want to share what the impact is, and it will be financially very significant, how can they go about that, Ed? What's the sort of recourse for retailers? What have we got for them?
So there's an opportunity for them to raise their concerns now directly with their MP to highlight some of the points that we've just been talking to around concerns around the illicit market and that not being addressed in the government's considerations in developing this policy around how we fund trading standards. And we made it a very simple way for them to do that is to go onto the ACS website, go onto the campaign section. You'll see there's an opportunity to tap in your postcode and email your MP with some of those key points, but also reflect on the specific circumstances of your store in your area. Because I don't know about you two, but I regularly speak to retailers about them knowing other businesses in their community that are flouting the regulations, not trading responsibly, and there's a level of frustration about not being able to raise their concerns. So this is your opportunity, really, to have your say on this, to put down a marker about what this policy will mean for your business directly with parliamentarians who will have a chance to scrutinise some of this regulation. Not as much as we'd like, but there will be an opportunity. So please do think about sending that email into your MP.
Yeah, and I
I
think
think just on
what's
that, sorry, Chris.
sorry, go on, Jim. I was
Sorry,
just
just on WhatsApp groups we had yesterday, we're seeing some news of some with some of our members, we're seeing news of some local enforcement activity, shutting down some other retailers close to where one of our members was, which is why he saw it. So, I mean, that as well as the politics in this, talking about and working on enforcement and reporting that locally has a really big difference as well. So I think that We are frustrated, and I think for all the frustration that any retailers feel, you can assume we feel exactly the same. And about the process and about the outcome here, and about the fact that we are walking towards a point where this is going to happen without enough enforcement. And I think that is unfortunately the reality of where we're heading. But we've got to focus on what we can do, both in terms of making those views known to government, but also on that local enforcement, because clearly, hopefully, in that instance, that retailer is going to see an uplift in sales because their local competitor, illegal competitor, has been taken out of the market, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we'll do as well, we will put the link to that campaign page where retailers can put the postcode in. We'll put that in the link in the description there. So if that wasn't enough, talking about recycling right now and disposables in a year's time, the next thing on the calendar that we know about in terms of dates is a new levy on vaping products that was announced in the budget earlier this month. Budget was March, wasn't it? Yeah, earlier this month, and will come in force in October 2026. So, Ed, again on the sort of overview of this, what is the vape levy and what's it for?
Yeah, so vaping levy, as you said, introduced in the budget. Essentially, this is applying an excise duty onto vaping liquids, and they're applying it in sort of what's called a progressive tax. So you have a different rate according to its nicotine strength in the liquid. So nicotine free would have 1 pound per milliliter. For a medium, you'd have 2 pound per milliliter, and then for high nicotine, you'd have 3 pound per milliliter. So trying to drive some focus and increase on lower nicotine products, but also bringing vaping into sort of an excise regime, which increases the cost of the product depending on its strength, but also puts a bit more focus around HMRC on tracking the products as they come through borders and go through supply chains to apply a tax on them. So it's subject to consultation now. We have until about May to respond and give some feedback on what that looks like. But essentially, you can think about this as similar to alcohol or tobacco duties being applied to those products. They'll be applied to vaping products in the same way, which brings a bit more focus around enforcement activity, but also increases the cost of that product. So some pros and cons to this intervention.
Yeah, I think on the face of it, it seems like one of the pros is that government will be looking at this market a lot more closely when it's got a bit more of a financial stake in it. But it feels in the same way as with tobacco, is that if people are seeking out cheaper tobacco, they'll get it from illicit sources, and that market then flourishes. James, what was your overall impression listening to that in the budget, and whether you think it will be a positive or negative measure for the sector? And bearing in mind we've got additional tobacco levies as well to try and maintain that differential. So
Yeah,
tobacco.
that one-off jump, isn't there? It's
Yeah,
that
yeah.
time to maintain the differential. So, I mean, so this is widely trailed. This was not the biggest surprise in the budget. I was struck by how these tax rates are relatively chunky. I mean, these are there's suggestion before they might be almost nominal rates in order to make them to make vapes HMRC's business, if you like. But these are meaningful rates. These have a real impact on the price, which is one of the reasons they want to do it. I was also struck by the differential, which as described there, between different types of products. So they're obviously trying to use this as a lever for trying to influence the price of those products and consumer behavior as a result of that. I do think that as well as concerns over those things, which will relate, the fact that HMRC now have a bit more skin in the game on this, I think it is a good thing. And when we talk to enforcement officers, local is very, very important. I think it's underestimated and it's neglected sometimes in all products. I'm not talking about just vapes here, but in tobacco enforcement and so on, local is really important. Sharing that intelligence, getting local suppliers shut down. But what enforcement officers will also tell you, and they're right, is that you get the volume wins at the border. You get the volume wins further up the supply chain when you stop those products coming in, and this might help to. Well, it should help. We must make sure it helps. Actually, let's go further. Must make sure it helps to minimize, sorry, to maximize the amount of product being stopped to the border, thus minimizing what's coming into the country. So, I think there is something to work with there. I think experience of tobacco enforcement suggests that just because the duty rate is high doesn't mean that therefore the enforcement will be perfect. But I think we have to try to see this as an opportunity. I think also the difference is with tobacco, you've got a handful of very big companies who. supply the vast majority of the products into the market. In vapes, obviously, it is a fairly wild market at some level. So the tail of that market is quite wild, and so catching that product coming in is that much harder. But I think, a lot of concern about obviously what's going to happen in terms of cost to consumers, what it's going to mean for our members, what's going to mean for the category. But we've got to try and embrace the opportunity on enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely right. So just to summarize where we are so far, we've got recycling coming in the next few days. We've got disposables in 1 year's time. We've then got a levy on the remaining vaping products in 2 years' time, 2.5 years. And then a few months after that, the generational ban will begin so that no one born after the 1st January 2009 will be able to buy tobacco. And the reason I mentioned the generational ban is because within that same legislation are additional powers to put in place more restrictions on vapes. Ed, can you run through what we've seen so far on this? I appreciate we don't have a huge amount of detail, but what do we expect down the line on this?
Yes, so the Tobacco and Vapes Bill, as you mentioned, will bring in the generational tobacco ban, but it will also give powers to ministers in England and in Wales and in Scotland to implement other restrictions on the vaping category as well. Most directly for convenience retailers, it would give them powers to restrict how vapes are displayed in stores. So whether that's on the counter, behind the counter, or behind a display screen like you have with tobacco, that those powers are there. Equally, there'll be some same powers given on packaging restrictions and also flavor restrictions as well. But the way that this legislation's been structured is that it gives the power to the Secretary of State to do this at a later date. So essentially, we're going to be having another conversation with government, might be this government, more likely the next government, to how they'll implement those different things. What flavors should be restricted? How should they be restricted? What packaging will be restricted? Where will we have to restrict displays? And we'll get into conversations that we often have, which is, what is the definition of a point of sale, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all going to be subject to another consultation, I suspect, somewhere around the middle of 2025 to bring in further regulations in this space. So not a huge amount of detail to give people yet, but we'll be having another conversation on this in the future for sure.
And do you anticipate that they may do this in terms of it, if it is going to happen for this and all the next government? Do you suspect that it'll be something that comes in around the same time as the generational ban, or ahead of that, or perhaps even after that? What's your sort of instincts on this?
It's really hard to predict. I think there's going to, I suspect it'll be the next government that'll be implementing these things. And I think they'll have a lot on their plate to deal with anyway, plus a settling in period of the existing measures that we've been talking about at the moment to see how they go. So I suspect you probably are thinking more towards the end of 2026 type time when we'd be having these types of conversations about when we'll get a timeframe on implementation. So much later on, and we've got a lot to do to help them understand the implications of all these policies on retailers.
So I think it sounds like there's no action at this point. It's just kind of hold fire, but certainly that coming down the line in the coming years, and something to keep a very close eye on. As we've been through this, it's kind of astonishing really how much there is happening in a very short space of time on one category. Obviously, it's grown very, very quickly, and as we said right at the start, it's kind of grown faster than the regulations could keep up with. James, just reflections on where we've got to and where we're going on this, and
Yeah, I mean, so stepping back from it, and I made this point, my first point made about recycling. These are real issues the government is grappling with, and they are issues that the public are concerned about. They are concerned about children vaping. They are concerned about the lack of recycling of a lot of vape products, and those are legitimate concerns that people have. I'd say the key point we make all the time is that those things are already illegal. Anyone under 18 vaping or buying a vape, a product not being being or facilities not being made available to recycle, that is already illegal. So focus on enforcing the laws that are currently there. So that's what you hear from us a lot, but it is kind of the fundamental point. I also think it's not unreasonable. You look at some of the flavors and particularly descriptions of those flavors, you can understand why the government might want to limit those to some extent, and to see those being attracted to children. Now, a lot of that's happened already, particularly for the larger companies, but I can see why they might want to regulate on that. I can also see why they wouldn't want the products to be seen all around, you know, a retail environment by kids. And I think that again is sort of is there's an element of reasonableness in that. On those two things, on flavors and descriptions, and on sighting in store, there's quite a wide variety of outcomes where they could end up on those things. And I think a big focus for us, and it's kind of the last timeline point, if you like, the last milestone we talked about. It probably, it might come in sooner than that. It might be they crack on with this back into this year. Who knows, election timetables and all the rest of it. But that it could be that it's the last thing. But I mean, arguably, you know, really crucial in terms of what that category is going to look like in future. And, you know, I think if vaping were to look like tobacco does now, or doesn't look like it, and you can't see it, it's the behind screens, you know, I think that would be a bad thing for the category, a bad thing for retailers operationally, I think probably a bad thing for the government's health objectives. So that's sort of one, you know, one key sort of thing to be looking out for. And similarly, I think if, you know, it's maybe not quite so much our battle, because obviously we're talking about the retailing of those products rather than formulation of them. But, you know, if what I do know, as somebody who's not a smoker, not a vapor, but I do know that adults vape fruit flavors. You know, they don't just vape tobacco and menthol. And it seems to me that you want to get people trying to quit smoking as far away from tobacco as possible and get them onto those other flavors. So those are two areas I think we've got to keep a really close eye on, and what we're working very actively on, because the outcome on those two things will be crucial in shaping what the long term of this category is from a regulatory point of view.
Yeah, absolutely right. So there's certainly a lot to go on there, and it's not like this has happened, you know, completely out of the blue. We have been trying to talk constructively to government for a couple of years about ways that you can minimize the impact of the vaping category on all these areas, on underage sales. We had a big campaign throughout the summer last year about Challenge 25 and making sure that retailers were implementing that. We've been talking about recycling for a very long time, and we've been talking to trading standards. We've been surveying trading standards on, you know, trying to help get the message out there that they need more resources for enforcement. So overall, it's quite frustrating that the government has kind of push the red button on kind of all of these areas, as opposed to trying to work constructively on this. But, you know, we are where we are, and we will continue to make representations on that. And for retailers, as we said earlier, it is important to continue to have your voice heard, because this is, you know, this is a big change. It's a number of big changes, and any one of those things would be a significant policy intervention for us. But to have all of them together, it makes a significant intervention for stores and a significant impact. That will just about do it for this episode of the podcast. As I say, check the links in the description, and moreover, just check the ACS website for more details on everything you need to know about vaping and other things as well. So thank you for joining us on the podcast, and we will see you again soon.